Okay, so are you ready for this? Today we're really going to dig into a question, and it's something that I think has been on a lot of people's minds. Do the police actually have a legal obligation to protect you?
Yeah, it's a big one.
It feels like one of those things where you'd think, well, duh, of course, that's their whole job, right?
Right.
But it's actually way more complicated than just a yes or no.
Absolutely.
We've got three sources lined up that I think are going to give us a lot to chew on. We've got a legal breakdown from Fine Law, some research on police mindsets, always fascinating, and then we're going to hear from the National Police Association to get their perspective.
Yeah, and we're kicking things off with a story that probably still sticks with you. The Uvalde school shooting. I mean, think about the outrage, the heartbreak when those families found out just how long it took for officers to actually engage the shooter. That whole situation just brought this question of police duty to protect front and center, in the most tragic way possible.
It's true, and sadly, you've always not unique, right? There's a pattern here. And often, after these horrible events, the families, they get hit with another blow, which is this thing called qualified immunity that
Yeah.
can really limit their legal options. Have you ever looked into that?
Yeah. So qualified immunity is basically a legal shield.
Yeah.
It's meant to protect government officials, like police officers, from being sued unless their actions very clearly violated someone's established constitutional rights.
Okay.
Now, the idea is to prevent frivolous lawsuits, but of course, it's controversial because critics will say it's gone too far and it's protecting people even when there's been serious misconduct.
It makes this whole thing even harder to untangle, right? Because our article from Fine Law straight up says the answer to the question, do the police have a duty to protect you, is a big fat no.
Yeah, no beating around the bush there. And they actually point to three Supreme Court cases that kind of solidified this whole no legal obligation thing, starting with Warren v. District of Columbia back in 1981. That one drew a line between public duty and a special relationship. Basically, the police are obligated to protect the public as a whole, but not any one individual unless there's a specific special relationship.
Got it. So you're not assigned a personal bodyguard just by existing.
Exactly.
Okay. So then there's this other case, Dushanie v. Winnebago County from 89. And this one wasn't directly about the police, but it still really matters here because it gets at this idea of the government's responsibility to protect.
Right. So in Dushanie, the court said that social services didn't have a duty to protect this child from an abusive father, even though they knew about the abuse. And their logic was, if you hold the state responsible for every single instance of harm, it would just be impossible, completely overload the system.
So that's tough. But then where does it leave someone who, like, has a restraining order against someone who's been abusive? Like, they're actively seeking protection, right? That's where the 2005 case Castle Rock v. Gonzalez comes in. And that one's just, it's rough.
Yeah, that was a tough one. This woman called the police because her estranged husband violated a restraining order, so there's that legal document right there. Tragically, he ended up murdering their three children, and the court ruled that the police didn't have a constitutional duty to protect her, even with that restraining order in place. And this is where you often hear that argument about resources, that the police can't be everywhere all the time, guaranteeing everyone's safety.
I mean, it makes sense on paper, but you hear these cases and it's like, hold on, if there's no legal requirement, what's stopping an officer from just not showing up? You
Yeah,
know, like,
right.
where's the incentive to act?
And that's where we get into this weird clash between what the law says and what police are actually trained to do. Even the International Association of Chiefs of Police, a huge law enforcement organization, they're all about taking immediate action in things like active shooter situations, which the FINLAW article points out.
So it's confusing. The law's like, nope. Not obligated, but then their training is all go, go, go. Every second counts. So when it hits the fan, what's an officer actually thinking? What guides their actions? Is it just a judgment call?
And that whole question of what's going on in an officer's head in those high-pressure moments is where our next source comes in. It's a research paper, and it gets into this warrior versus guardian police mindset idea, which, at first glance, it's like, okay, is this just another good cop, bad cop cliche?
Right, totally. We've seen that movie before.
But it's way more nuanced than that. The researchers, they define the warrior mindset as this intense focus on fighting crime, using control as the main strategy, and often seeing citizens through this us versus them lens. Like, there's an inherent suspicion there. On the other hand, the guardian mindset is all about service. It's about talking to people, treating them with respect, building actual trust with the community rather than just imposing order.
Right. Makes sense so far. But here's where it gets really interesting. Kind of throws a wrench in the works, actually.
You're talking about the part of the study where they looked at Australian police officers, and they found that, get this, the more warrior an officer saw themselves, the less likely they were to also embrace the guardian approach, which actually goes against some other research on this, but still, it kind of makes you think.
It really does.
Yeah.
Because you'd assume it's a spectrum, right? Like maybe you're a little bit of both, depending on the situation. But this is saying it's more like picking a side. So what makes an officer gravitate towards one over the other? What makes them tick?
Well, the researchers actually dug into that, and they found that an officer's level of cynicism towards the public, the very people they're supposed to be protecting, that cynicism actually played a role in why some might be drawn to those warrior tactics. Like, the more cynical they were, the more they saw force and control as the answer.
Makes you think, is that cynicism already there when they sign up, or does it get baked in over time? Like if you're constantly dealing with negativity and distrust from the community, that's got to shape how you approach the job, right?
100%. And that's a huge takeaway here. It means that maybe dealing with those underlying factors that lead to cynicism could be just as important as any tactical training they get. It's not as easy as slapping a label on an officer and saying good or bad, because there's this whole layer of personal experience and perception mixed in. And it's interesting how this whole cynicism thing plays into the way the National Police Association sees this whole warrior versus guardian debate, which is our third source for today. They really push back hard against that guardian label.
Yeah, they did not hold back.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa, hold the phone. This guardian thing is just some political tactic to make law enforcement look bad.
Exactly. And for them, that warrior mindset, it's not up for debate. They see it as absolutely essential. You know, like if you're going to survive dangerous situations on the job, you got to have that edge. But at the same time, they were very clear that being a warrior doesn't mean you can't also be compassionate, that you don't have those de-escalation skills or know how to talk to people. It's more about having that inner strength, that ability to handle whatever gets thrown at you.
Right. And they weren't just being theoretical about it either.
Yeah.
Remember that part where they talked about the whole police are too militarized argument? The author actually said he'd give someone $100 if they could prove that civilian police forces are using those armored vehicles and stuff to go on the offensive. It was like they were saying, hey, we need this equipment for very specific situations, high-risk stuff, not for your average traffic stop.
It was a bold way to make their point, for sure. And it just shows you how differently these things can be perceived, right? Like you've got the public perception versus how the people on the inside, those in law enforcement, how they view their roles, the tools they need to do their jobs. It feels like that NPA article is really trying to push back against what they see as this inaccurate, unfair portrayal of their profession.
Okay, so where does that leave us?
Yeah.
It feels like we're trying to make sense of a lot here, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've got the law saying there's no obligation to protect individuals, but then the training is all about being ready to do exactly that. Then there's the whole psychology piece, how an officer's mindset, influenced by their experiences, maybe even that cynicism we were talking about, how that all comes into play. And then on top of all that, you've got completely different ideas about what it means to be a police officer in the first place.
It's true. It's a lot. And I think the mistake is thinking there's going to be this simple, cut and dried answer, because this isn't about laws on a page. We're
Yeah.
talking about human beings making split second decisions, often under intense pressure in situations with incredibly high stakes. And those decisions, they're not made in a vacuum. They're affected by a ton of factors. Some of them, you know, they're deeply ingrained, maybe even subconscious. So it's about understanding that legal landscape, yeah, but also the internal pressures of the job and how those things collide with the reality of the communities they're serving, the people they interact with every day.
And that's what you get into this need for more open communication, right? Like
Right.
real, honest dialogue between law enforcement and the people they're encountering out there every day.
Yeah.
Because if we don't have that, if we can't find a way to understand each other, that suspicion, that distrust, it's just going to keep growing.
Right, and it's not easy, but bridging that gap in understanding, that's crucial. If we want to even have a shot at creating a system that actually keeps people safe and is also fair in how it treats everyone.
So where do we even begin with that? Because we've covered a lot of ground here, and it's starting to feel like something's missing. You know, like we know the law has its limits, and that how an officer sees their role matters hugely, but what can we actually do with that knowledge? How do we make things better?
Well, If you remember that research paper we talked about, it wasn't just about identifying these different mindsets. They actually looked at potential solutions too. And one thing that kept coming up was this concept of procedural justice.
Okay, so what does that mean in plain English? What is procedural justice?
So it's basically about ensuring that every interaction the police have, it's fair, it's transparent, and it's respectful no matter who they're dealing with. It's about explaining your actions, giving people a chance to actually be heard, treating everyone with dignity, even when you're in a situation where you have to enforce the law. And the research actually shows that when people feel like they've been treated fairly by the police, even if they don't like the outcome, they're more likely to cooperate and see the police as legitimate.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to feel like they're being treated unfairly or like their voice doesn't matter. But if you understand the rules and you feel like you're being treated with respect, you're probably less likely to make things worse, right? Less likely to escalate.
Exactly. But, and this is interesting, remember that National Police Association article and how much they emphasized that warrior mindset? Well, some researchers think that very mindset might make it harder for some officers to really get behind procedural justice.
So it's like they see it as compromising their authority or effectiveness or even putting them at risk.
It's complicated, and it goes back to that need for control. Some officers might worry that if they give people too much of a voice, if they have to explain everything in detail, it'll be seen as weakness or make it harder for them to do their jobs, to maintain order.
So we're back to this gap, right? If there's resistance to the very things that could help build trust, how do we even move forward?
Well, that's where the right kind of training and education come in. And I'm not just talking about how to handle a weapon or physically restrain someone. I'm talking about training that gets into the psychology of all of this, that helps officers understand why de-escalation is so valuable, how building trust can actually make their jobs safer in the long run.
So it's almost like instead of just teaching officers how to be tough, we also need to teach them how to build relationships, you know, like how to de-escalate things before they even get to that point.
Exactly. Give them more tools in their toolbox. Right. And part of that is helping them see how their own experiences, even their biases, how that affects how they interact with people.
Yeah, because that cynicism we talked about
Yeah.
doesn't come out of thin air. Imagine being an officer who feels like every day you're disrespected, misunderstood, even demonized by the community you're serving. That's got to create a wall, right?
For sure. And that's why we can't just talk about police reform in a bubble. You know, we can talk about training and all that. But if we ignore those bigger issues, those societal factors that create this divide, things like poverty, lack of opportunity, systemic racism, if we don't deal with that stuff, we're never going to get to the root of the problem.
It's almost like we expect the police to single-handedly fix these massive societal problems, and that's not realistic.
Right. Everyone has a role to play here. It's about building bridges, not walls.
Right.
Being willing to have those tough conversations, even when they're uncomfortable, and being honest with ourselves about, you know, about our own assumptions, both about law enforcement and about the communities they serve.
It's interesting. This whole deep dive has really made me think about those assumptions we all carry around. When we hear warrior or guardian, we think we know what that means, but man, the more we dug into it, it's so much more complicated than those labels.
It's true, and it's fascinating how much gray area there is in all of this, right? Like, the law's not always crystal clear, human behavior even less so. And yet, here we are trying to figure out these intense, high-pressure situations, often with very little information and a whole lot of emotion flying around.
It's like we're all trying to solve this puzzle, but we've got different pieces, and we're not even speaking the same language. So, yeah, no wonder it's so hard to find that common ground.
But I think that's why it's so important to have these conversations, by really digging into the details, looking at the law, the psychology, the bigger picture of what's happening in society, we at least start to see how it's all connected, you know?
And maybe, just maybe, if we can wrap our heads around how complex it all is, if we can at least acknowledge the challenges, then we can actually start working towards solutions that actually make a difference.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Which brings us to our final thought for everyone listening today. We've spent a lot of time talking about this legal obligation to protect, but what if we shifted our thinking? What if instead of just focusing on protecting individuals, we put more emphasis on the safety and well-being of everyone? How would that change how we approach policing, what we expect from law enforcement, even how we see our own roles in creating safer communities? I think that's something worth thinking about as we continue to grapple with all of this because it's not going away anytime soon. Anyway, thanks for joining us for this deep dive. See you next time.